Welcome, welcome. Episode 36 here of the Phoenix Suns podcast here on Bright Side of the Sun. Again, nameless. So if you're in the chat box, this is the very beginning of the podcast. Give us name ideas, something creative, something good. But, you know, if we're the Phoenix Suns podcast on Bright Side of the Sun forever, that kind of is what it is. But welcome into episode 36. I'm writing solo right now, but we're going to have a special guest on here to start our previews. We're going to start breaking down the Pacific Division and starting to see how the teams stack up against the Phoenix Suns. I would imagine most people can kind of put two and two together, but we're going to go ahead and do our due diligence and talk to every team out there. And with episode 36, it's kind of interesting because the number 36 has no relevance to the Phoenix Suns. It has no relevance to our guest team, the Sacramento Kings. They've actually had no players that have donned that number in the history of both franchises. But cool thing about number 36 is that it's actually the number of prongs on a roulette wheel. So we're going to go ahead and play the odds, and we're going to see what myself, as well as Sacktown Royalties' Greg Wissinger, is thinking about the Sacramento Kings, the Phoenix Suns, and all relevant topics. How are you doing today, Greg?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, yeah. And I know you guys are running your own podcast over there on Sacktown Royalty. So talk a little bit about what you do over there with Sacktown Royalty and what you guys have going on over there right now.
Yeah, as far as our podcast, I host our Sacktown Royalty show, which we try to do at least one show a week. Sometimes we'll do two, but usually one. And I just have a different guest on each week, so kind of similar to what you're doing here today. And we just babble about the Kings, and it's wildly unprofessional, and it's not very good because we don't try very hard. So I encourage everyone to check it out.
That sounds like about the amount of effort that I put into this bad boy here. No, are you kidding? I got Venn diagrams out the wazoo for the Sacramento Kings. I'm ready to blow your mind with my knowledge on your team. But then again, you guys have a bevy of talent compared to the Phoenix Suns right now. And I think a lot of teams would probably be jealous with some of the young talent you guys got. And, you know, when you look at your team, I know that it's tough. You guys haven't made the playoffs or been above 500 for 7 years. It's been kind of a slow period since the run-and-gun Kings that you guys had from almost, it feels like, yesteryear. But with this young talent, I mean, are you guys starting to feel positive about this team with the direction they're heading?
Yes, but I think it's even more than just the young talent. It's that we finally have kind of a clean slate in terms of ownership and management and coaching. The Kings have had young talent for years and years now because we've been at the bottom of the lottery standings for coming on nearly a decade. The problem has been that we haven't had good coaching, good player development, and a good organizational structure around that. With the sale of the Kings and the Blues finally being out of the picture, there's a clean slate, there's new management, new coaching, and it feels like the organization is taking a step towards legitimacy. So that combined with all the young talent we've accumulated over the years, it's easy to see how a leap could happen, if not this season, in the near future.
When you're a good team, it's not a super sexy subject to talk about the management and the coaching and the general manager and the ownership. But when you're a bad team, it's almost like that stuff's more important than maybe the talent on the team. When the team was going through that limbo of maybe they're going to leave Seattle, maybe they're going to be in Sacramento, I mean, walk us through the range of emotions on what you were going through as not only a Sacramento Kings fan, but a person that follows the team, writes about the team, and covers the team.
It really was a roller coaster. It was, I mean, every day and sometimes multiple times a day, there was breaking news, there was a new twist, a new turn, something new being interpreted. You know, we were examining every little bit of minutia as far as what could be happening with the team. And it was that combination of, you know, when something would go good, you'd get really excited and really hopeful. But it was also this impending sense of doom hanging over all of us in the fan base for a long time. And there was anger and sadness and a sense of, like, you know, we're just fighting against the wind. And, you know, eventually it all worked out. And that feeling of joy when the board of governors elected to keep the Kings in Sacramento instead of moving them to Seattle. I mean, to us, that was our championship. I mean, I'd love to someday win an actual NBA championship so that I can see how the two compare, but for the time being, that was just such a huge win. And for a lot of the fan base, we're still kind of riding that high and that wave of joy that no matter what happens on the court, we're still going to be okay this season.
Yeah, and that you'll be on a court in Sacramento, more or less. And when you look at the – you talk about the ownership – the Phoenix Suns have a love-hate relationship, more of the former than the latter there, with Robert Sarver. And with Robert Sarver, the love-hate relationship has been there for a while. what was it like, though, with the Maloofs? Because they got so much accolade. They were like the party playboy young owners when the team was winning. But ever since the team has been losing, it feels like all their flaws are leaking out. What were they like as owners from your perspective?
They were pretty awful for the better part of the last 8 or 9 years. They were willing to spend when they were doing well financially and, you know, when the team was well. And they enjoyed being the celebrities. They loved people, you know, heaping accolades on them. They loved being the golden child, children of NBA ownership. But then when the economy turned, they took a bad hit because they overexpanded their casino operations at the wrong time. And it was just one domino after another where you could just see so much of their other outside business failings impacting their ownership of the Kings, to the point where towards the end, the Kings were their only source of real money-making income. They had sold off pretty much all their other businesses and assets that would earn them significant money. And so you can't have an NBA team be your source of income. If it is, then it's going to suffer. And, you know, we saw deals like Thomas Robinson being traded away in the middle of his rookie year because they wanted to save some money and get some cash back in the trade. And that was just to keep themselves afloat. And they're very wealthy in other ways still. They have a lot of money tied up in stocks and things like that, but they didn't have anything that brought in revenue, and they refused to lose any money in their operation of the team. I just to stress to your listeners just how bad it was in Sacramento, the restrooms at Arco Arena, or Sleep Train Arena, as it became, the restrooms were like, if you went in, half the restroom, like half the urinals, half the stalls were out of order. They never fixed anything. There were broken seats around the arena that just couldn't be sold for ticket purposes anymore because the seats were broken and they refused to fix it. I mean, it was a nightmare having them as owners, especially towards the end when they were just trying everything they could to get the team out of town.
You know what? I've never had any issues with the urinals in U.S. Airways, and I don't think you will either if you come down here for a road visit to the Phoenix Suns game. So, yeah, as much as it is to complain about Robert Sarver, about his like his business acumen and the way that he meddles in basketball affairs when you want your owner to just kind of kick back and let basketball people do their thing, now the it looks like, at least with the Suns, they're kind of doing that. Sarver stepping back. They got their basketball guys. The Kings took an odd approach. I like what they did at the end of the day with the guys they brought in. But you hire Mike Malone, 2 weeks later, you hire your general manager. A little bit of a weird scenario, but what is your vibe on those two guys? Because I loved both the hires. It just felt like they were probably done in the inverse of what traditionally a team would normally do.
Yeah, and that was it was a very weird scenario, but it was one of those things where Vivek Ramadive, the new main owner of the Kings, it's a large ownership group, but he's the face of it. He had a working relationship with Mike Malone from their time in Golden State. Mike Malone was an assistant for the Golden State Warriors. Vivek Ranadive was a minority owner of the Warriors. And it had an opportunity to kind of form that connection. And it was one of those things where Vivek always kind of felt like if he had a chance to own the team, he'd want to bring Malone along with him and have him be his coach. He really believed in him. And he knew he wanted that right away. And so then it became, I mean, if you're the owner, you can decide, hey, I want this coach, and then I'm going to find a GM who works with him, as opposed to doing it the other way around, which is the more normal route of going about that situation. But then he brought in Pete D'Alessandro, who had been assistant GM under Masai Ujiri for the Denver Nuggets. And in Pete, he got a guy who had a very similar philosophy to Malone and was willing to take Malone's input because of how quickly everything happened between the ownership change and the preparation leading up to the draft, Mike Malone was basically almost serving as like an acting GM during workouts where he was watching guys and seeing what he liked. And then when Pete came in, he met with Mike Malone and said, you know, what did you see? What did you like? And they brought a few guys back so that Pete could get a firsthand look and do some in-person scouting as well. But I think that both of them are really good hires, if nothing else. They're great in the sense that they're well-respected hires throughout the league. And it's been a very long time since the Kings hired someone, and everyone around the league said, yeah, that's a pretty smart hire. That's a well-respected guy. That has not been the norm for our coaching carousel since Rick Adelman left. It's been just one guy after another that's been a punchline of one sort or another that it's just been a mess for our coaching situation. So I like that they came in. They seem to have no issues in terms of working together. They all seem to get along great. You know, we'll see how it works out long term. But we're all very optimistic right now, just because even if it doesn't work, at least we gave it a legitimate shot, which is more than we can say over the past decade.
Yeah, yeah, and they're starting to get the front office right, but I think it's kind of ironic that you mentioned, you know, they got the guys in there, they wanted to get them in there to get prepared for the NBA draft 9 days before the actual NBA draft, where there's very little that they'd be able to actually get done. I mean, Mike Malone's brought in essentially, what was that, like 23, 24 days before the draft, and they bring in their general manager just 9 days beforehand. But ironically, they ended up having a guy that they were very high on, a guy that a lot of people thought could go 1, 2, or 3, more or less fall in their lap in Ben McLemore. I mean, when you're watching the draft, Anthony Bennett goes number one. Everyone goes ballistic. We're wondering why this guy is red and things are going crazy. And then Ben McLemore falls down to you guys. How ecstatic were you, or how indifferent were you about the Ben McLemore pick?
I was actually very excited. I really like him, but at the same time, I honestly hadn't scouted him much leading up to the draft because I didn't think he'd be there at 7. I was looking at other guys who were realistically expected to be around there. Like, one of the guys we were looking at a lot was Anthony Bennett. We thought that, you know, based on all the pre-draft projections, a lot of people thought he might be available. He might slide down draft boards. And so we were debating, you know, do we like Anthony Bennett? Would we be happy with him? And then we get arguably one of the top talents in the draft. Now, a lot of Kings fans were a little apprehensive about it just because his situation, Ben McLemore's situation, mirrored Thomas Robinson's in a lot of ways, where you got a guy coming out of Kansas who's projected as one of the top two players in the draft, and then he slides down the board to the Kings. And because of the way that the Thomas Robinson situation worked out in Sacramento, a lot of people were kind of worried, but we had to kind of reassure our readers that, you know, they both slid down the draft, they were projected higher, they're, you know, both from Kansas, but beyond that, there's not a lot of similarity there. They're different types of players. They're different positions. They're different everything. They're different people. So overall, we're very excited, and I'm really excited about his potential, but because we've had so many high picks and so many guys with a lot of potential on the Kings, I'm also a little apprehensive, and I kind of want to see it proven. You know, I've gotten to the point where I become more cautious when a guy slides down a draft board that, you know, as much as I like the armchair quarterback, the whole thing, I do accept that NBA GMs, for the most part, know a little more than I do about basketball.
Yeah, and that's what Chris Grant and Cleveland and them think, is that when they get a top four pick, they basically try to play the I'm smarter than you card, and they draft kind of whoever the heck they want to draft. And, you know, they proved it with Anthony Bennett this year, who, by all accounts, like you said, was supposed to be a guy that fell into, he was the guy that most people thought would slide, not just, you know, to the Kings, but could potentially slide to like the late lottery, maybe be a draft pick in the teens because of just the apprehension on him being a tweener.
And to be honest, I don't always agree with their picks in Cleveland, but I like the approach of, you know, screw you, we're going to take whoever we like, wherever we're at, because we don't want to mess with maybe not getting them later. And even though none of us really projected Anthony Bennett to Cleveland, I think he might be a really nice fit there. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see how that works out. I mean, with the Anthony Bennett thing, it just, you look at their team and you go, Tristan Thompson, you just invested a fourth pick in him, but then again, those guys might be able to play together on the court. I don't know. I was with all the workouts. I talked to Bennett before the draft a few times. Whenever a guy who's 6'9" that's most effective as a four starts talking about, I can be a three, that's when you get a little bit scared. We saw it with Marcus Morris. We've seen it with all kinds of guys, and it's, you know, go play where you're most effective. But that's a podcast for the Cleveland Cavaliers to go through.
Yeah.
You guys get Ben McLemore. Now, I look at the roster, and actually, I like the shakeups. I don't know how big of a fan or how big of a following Tyreke Evans had in Sacramento, but the swap to bring in Gravis Vasquez, I mean, it's not a sexy pick. No one's going to look at Gravis and go, all-star, we're now making the playoffs. But on the flip side, that's not what Tyreke was giving you guys either. When you look at this team, is Ben McLemore projected as a starter, in your opinion? Because I don't know if he overthrows Marcus Thornton. I mean, do you bring him along slow, or do you think he starts?
I believe he will have to earn the starting spot. Now, I'd be very surprised if he earns it out of training camp. I think that he's going to have to prove it in the games. I think that Marcus Thornton is going to be the day one starter. If I had to pick who was going to be the starter by the end of the season, I'd say it's a coin flip. It could go either way. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if Ben McLemore came in and took over the job very quickly. But I also wouldn't be surprised if they rolled with Thornton as the starter for most of the season, if not the whole season. I think that Thornton has been in a starting role before when Tyreek Evans was dealing with injuries, and he was a much better player in a starting role than he was last year coming back off the bench with Tyreek healthier. So I think that although Thornton struggles defensively, he puts a lot of effort in the defensive end, but that could be where McLemore earns the starting role, because Mike Malone has preached a big emphasis on improving the defense. He does not want to be the worst defensive team in the league this season. And you know, Thornton, as much as he tries, he does struggle on defense. So if McLemore can come in and use his athleticism to be a really solid defender, especially a team defender, then I think that that could potentially be the thing that puts him over the top and he gets in that starting rotation based on his defense.
And that's definitely one thing that everyone, it's fun to talk about a pretty jump shot, but when you break down his game and you watch a lot of him in college, he was a fantastic off-ball slash team defender. And he struggled a little bit in man-to-man, but he was a freshman guarding, you know, arguably the best wing on every single team. But he's a guy that showed a lot of potential on the defensive end, and going out there and getting Al-Farouq Aminu and you know, Gravis Vasquez to an extent, kind of building up, getting a little bit more athletic, a little longer, a little bit better on the defensive end with the Sacramento Kings. When you look at that, though, so let's pretend that it's Vasquez and Thornton are starting, and you have now, though, you have two waves, because Isaiah Thomas and Ben McLemore, that's nothing to sneeze at. If they just move those guys around in waves or in whatever combination they want, there's quality depth there. I mean, how excited are you when you look at it and go, man, we have guys on the bench that could potentially start? Like you said, it's a coin flip. At the end of the season, a lot of these guys might switch roles in the starting lineup.
Well, and real quick, I just wanted to clarify, we didn't get Al-Farouq Aminu, we got Luke Richard Bonvic.
I see, and I confuse those guys all the time. Thank you for correcting me on that one. Yeah, from the Milwaukee Bucks, a guy I like better than Al-Farouq Aminu, by the way.
I do as well. But in terms of starting, I wouldn't assume that Gravis Vasquez is going to actually be the starter at point guard. Isaiah Thomas has, and it's interesting because Jason Thompson has dealt with this through his Kings career as well, but Isaiah Thomas has dealt with every year of his career, people are trying to knock him down a peg, and he keeps stepping up. Last year, he was the incumbent starter, and the team brought in Aaron Brooks as the presumed new starter, and Isaiah Thomas won his starting role back. So, but that kind of speaks to your point, where it could go either way. And in terms of how I feel about it, it's actually kind of become the norm for us, where, and it's a combination of we have a lot of undeveloped depth, but we also have a lot of guys who don't put themselves ahead of the others at their position. We've got a lot of guys, you know, from the bottom of our bench to our starters, we've got guys of roughly the same skill level. And fortunately, we're a bad basketball team, so that means that the skill level is not exactly great. You know, the only position where there's a clear-cut starter for opening day even is at center with DeMarcus Cousins. Every other position is pretty much open right now. We don't know if Bonvic will start at the three, or if it'll be John Salmonsmore, or you know, we don't know which of our 100 power forwards might start day one. So we have depth, but that depth is both a blessing and a curse, that we have a lot of guys with similar skill set, but that means we don't have anyone that stands out as a clear-cut starter.
And so I want to save DeMarcus there for the last bit that we're going to touch on. So with Isaiah Thomas, to kind of close out on him and the whole point guard situation, what is Isaiah Thomas's role in the future for this team? Because there was a lot of, we're dangling him to the Cavaliers for the number 31 pick, which I thought was laughable in a sense of value. But it was almost like the Kings were saying, well, we got to get something for him. And that's kind of where those rumors were coming from. What do you think his future is on this team? Because he showed the ability to be a quality starter. He showed an ability to be a change pacer guy off the bench. And also, you know, he's got his flaws and limitations.
Well, I'll start by saying, in regards to that rumor, we didn't even bother reporting on it because we didn't think it was a worthwhile rumor. There are certain sources that float things out there, and we don't bother paying attention when those sources float things out there. So I don't think that that was ever truly in discussion. In terms of Isaiah Thomas's role, he could be a long-term starter in this league. He could be a guy who comes off the bench in an energy role. A lot of people, though, are eager to kind of shoehorn him into that off-the-bench energy role simply because he's undersized compared to a traditional point guard size that you'd want in the NBA. But if there's one thing I've learned just watching and covering Isaiah Thomas is that I'm not going to ever bet against him. I think that he's, at the worst, I think he falls somewhere in the top 20 of NBA point guards. That might be a little bit of homer in me. I'm not sure if you agree or disagree, but I would rate him somewhere in the top 20. And I think that there's plenty of other teams that he would also start for, but there's plenty of really good teams that have point guards he would start by, or he would come off the bench for. So I think it all depends on where his career goes and what sort of teams he's on. But I have trouble ever betting against him just because every time anyone does, they look like an idiot.
So quick question for you then, and I'm going to, you can not answer this or you can be political or whatever you want. I'm going to get you to draw the ire of the Suns fans out there. So what I play this, I play this game a lot with the podcast cohort Jim that I have usually on. And we always do this where would you trade straight up for this player to kind of determine the value and see where someone ranks, as you mentioned, like a top 20 type point guard in Isaiah Thomas. Would you trade Isaiah Thomas contracts, you know, disregarded, just talking about talent? Would you trade him straight up for Goran Dragic today?
Straight up in terms of talent? Ooh, that's a good question because I really like Goran Dragic. I really like him. I think that he's in a tough spot because, you know, Phoenix is obviously in the kind of rebuilding phase and that doesn't really line up with where he's at. That's tough. I think I wouldn't, but only because I'm a homer and I love the guy that's on my team. You know what I mean? Like,
oh,
if
yeah, no, that's
for first, and I was a Suns fan, I would probably go the other way and probably keep Dragic. But
so it's almost for you, it's almost like a coin flip, you'd probably say, where those guys are probably on equal footing in that same general range on point guards, probably.
Yeah, I would say roughly. Dragic might be a little bit better, but, you know, Isaiah's a little bit younger, and I know you said throw out a contract, but Isaiah's on a much better contract for now. We'll see what his next contract looks like, but he's on a steal of a rookie deal since he was the 60th overall pick.
And so just quick answer with this one, because Goran is a different conversation, but straight up Eric Bledsoe for Isaiah Thomas.
I think he almost has to just because Bledsoe has shown so much potential. But I also think that it seems like the hype on Bledsoe has gotten a little excessive.
The man is exceeding. He's creating his own myth, and he hasn't really gotten out there to do anything. He's got his own opus, his own tale out there, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people who are really big fans on him and wanted to see him get more playing time, and, you know, he kept getting buried by Vinny Del Negro last year, but I almost think you have to see a little bit more from him, whereas I don't know. It's probably another coin flip for me just because I think that Bledsoe probably has way more upside. But I think Thomas is a more proven player at this point.
And see, and as you may not believe this, but I actually fall in line with your opinion. Attack Brightside fans, go ahead. But I fall in line with that opinion with Eric Bledsoe. I've been saying that since I called him the best asset in the NBA for the past two summers, but I've also said that I also don't think he's going to become Chris Paul or Russell Westbrook. He's not going to become an elite starter necessarily, but he was always that like amazing asset because he was such a talented player behind a superstar. And then the hardest one, this is going to be tough for you. I know it. Again, probably another coin flip. Isaiah Thomas or Kendall Marshall?
I'd say Isaiah Thomas, which pains me because I was actually a huge Kendall Marshall supporter coming out of college. In the draft, I thought everyone was crazy for rating Lillard above Marshall, and I look like a complete idiot for that assessment now.
Hey, you know what? It happens. It happens. So one thing that makes a lot of people look like idiots and makes them scratch their head and get infuriated is that final topic I wanted to get on with you is you have DeMarcus Cousins. He's essentially in a contract year when you consider his rookie year qualifying year is next season. What are you expecting to see out of DeMarcus Cousins? Are you expecting like a veteran contract year type performance out of him this year, or is it just with him it's too hard to tell?
It's hard to tell just because I genuinely believe that no matter what he does this year, he's going to get a max offer next year in restricted free agency. So I don't think the incentive is there for him in the way that the incentive is there for a lot of guys in the contract year. Now the question is whether or not the teams are going to be interested at all in matching that. But I genuinely believe he'll get a max contract offer next next summer from either the Kings or elsewhere. So I'm not really looking at it in terms of the contract here. I'm looking to see how he responds to having organizational structure around him and a system that holds him accountable. Because over the past couple of years, anytime a coach or management has attempted to hold DeMarcus accountable for something, either the management overrides the coach, as we saw with Paul Westphal and Jeff Petrie overriding him, or when management suspends him, like last year Jeff Petrie did, then the ownership overrode him, and then the Blues insisted that his indefinite suspension become one game. So I'm interested to see what happens when there's a organizational structure that holds him accountable, holds his feet to the fire, holds him responsible for his actions and his own development. And they've shown a willingness, as they did with Tyreke Evans, where a lot of Kings fans felt that the contract that the Pelicans gave Tyreke was very reasonable. Ownership showed that, hey, if you're not in our picture, we're going to let you walk. We're not going to keep you just because you're a good player or one of the better players on this roster. We have a vision for where this roster is going to go, and you're either going to fall in line with that or you're going to go somewhere else, and we don't care if we have to let you go. So it'll be very interesting to see. I'm hopeful, but at this point, after season, being hopeful in DeMarcus Cousins begins to feel like you're Charlie Brown going to kick the football, and it's about to be pulled away again. So I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, it's almost like if you're Charlie Brown going to go kick the football, but you're Adam Vinatieri in the Super Bowl going to go kick it, and it keeps getting pulled away because the kid's talented as all get out, and you know he's probably going to be able to kick it right through the uprights all the time, but he just something about it just doesn't click. I mean, we saw it out here with Michael Beasley with the Suns, and other teams have seen it with their enigmatic superstars that can be the best player in the world, but just for some reason just settle for being average or, you know, being inconsistent. So with that talented roster, like we talked about, a lot of young pieces, seems like you're a little indifferent on the depth, which, you know, I definitely understand. When you look at this roster, the most wins they've had in the past 7 years since not making the playoffs is 38. Where would you, if I told you the over-under for the Kings wins, they won 28 games last year. If I put the over-under at 30, what would you go over? Would you go under? And by how much, you think?
And I think that's a great question, because that's about where I would put the over-under as well. Like, if I'm setting the line to get people to bet on either side of it, I'm setting it at 30 wins for this team, because it's easy to see a lot of pieces that could improve the team and take them above that 28 wins that they've had in you know, last couple of years. They've been around 25, 26, 27, 28 wins. So it's really easy to see a couple game improvement out of this team. But at the same time, you got to wonder how big a loss is losing Tyreke Evans, because even if he didn't really fit with the roster, and even if you like with, you know, getting Graves Vasquez back in return, he was one of the best players on this roster, and he just put together a really great season. So you got to factor in, you know, how many losses or how many wins is he worth taking out of the equation. If I had to pick based on an over-under of 30, I would say over, but just barely, and that's because I'm a homer. I've picked over 30 wins the past 3 years, and I'm going to stick with it till I'm right.
There you go. Just insanity, right? Just that chaos theory. When you look at the Kings in comparison to the Suns, because I think that two teams mentioned at the bottom five of the West, because I think the Kings have been mentioned with that potential. Maybe they can be in that, like, 9, 10, 11 seed in the East, but then on the flip side of it, they can probably very easily be down there with teams like Phoenix at the very bottom of the standings. Are you picturing the Kings at the basement of the Pacific Division, or do you envision them being better record-wise than the Phoenix Suns this year?
I think they'll be better than Phoenix. I think that Phoenix is at a different point in their rebuild, and I think that Phoenix has some nice pieces. It really depends how things start to fall together and how players develop. I think it's smart, though, to do things like today's news where they got rid of Beasley. I think that things like that will help Phoenix in the long run. As far as the Kings, I think that they'll still firmly be in the lottery, but I'm hoping to see them take that step to where they're playing competitive every night. They're not a doormat for any team. They're not having completely off nights where they get blown out by 30 or 50 points. I'm looking to see them be competitive to where they can set themselves up to where a year from now we're talking about how they could be competing for a playoff spot.
Yeah, that sounds good. So you're with, if you had to put a guess on it, five teams in the Pacific Division, where do the Kings fall?
I think you got to put them I'd have to put them fourth. I'd say Phoenix is five, and then the Kings are fourth, and then everyone else can be above them. So.
Everyone else can just be above them. We're getting used to saying that as well out here in Phoenix. Well. No, Greg, I appreciate you jumping on. You ran long with me, and it's always good to have royalty on the podcast, so hopefully we can have you on maybe as the season's getting geared up in the season when the Suns are playing the Kings, because those games are going to be very, very important, maybe not for the standings for the playoffs, but they'll be important for that lottery seeding, so we'll definitely have some important stuff to talk about as the season progresses.
All right, sounds good.
All right, man, thanks again for jumping on.
Thanks.
Yeah, that was Greg Wissinger, as I mentioned there at the beginning, Sacktown royalty. Great stuff. I mean, could probably have talked about basketball for too long. I just realized that we were hitting that 30-minute mark. I was like, all right, time to jump off. So, yeah, I appreciate his take and his candor. Very honest, very open about a lot of things, and the Suns fans can go jump at him for some of the things that he had mentioned. But really interesting that, with Isaiah Thomas and coin flip with him and Goran, coin flip potentially with him and Eric Bledsoe, it's definitely, that's a very interesting team. I think if everything lines up, 30 to 35 wins is not unrealistic, and but then the same thing, I said that with the Suns, if everything lines up, they can win about 38 to 40 games, but then everything didn't line up and they ended up winning in the 20s. So that could be the Kings, that could be the Suns. That's part one here of episode 36. Thanks for listening. Definitely appreciate you guys following along, and click on the link in the same post here to listen to an exclusive first interview Channing Frye has done, I believe, since talking about being medically cleared. Lots of great stuff. We just talked to him a little bit earlier today, so click on the link, listen to that Channing Frye interview, and we'll be back next week with an all-new episode of the podcast here on Bright Side of the Sun.